Porschebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porschebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porschebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porschebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I am a passenger, and I ride, through the city backsides. I see the stars come out of the sky. Yeah, the bright and hollow sky. You know it looks so good tonight.
We're back at the races. And thank Billy Koch for the visit. Always fun. He's perennially upbeat. And I said yesterday that he was giving me the business when I walked by him at one point into the paddock on Saturday. hammer down, engaging with. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough tomorrow. It's going to take me a day or two to get used to being solo again. It's really been a lot of fun, and we'll thank him formally before we wrap up. I mentioned John Sadler is going to join us at 8 or 11 o'clock. That's the other thing I'm going to have to adjust to again. I back to the, when you stay here for more than 3 days, your internal clock, makes the shift, to the local time. So, we're going to talk to John White, I mentioned, is on his way over. We were supposed to also get together, with Jeremy Plunk. We didn't get to Jeremy, last week. For a countdown, so we'll get a countdown to the crown as well. So, in addition to the early stake weekend at Keeneland, they already drew for Friday, and we've got the Makers 46, and you can't run one of these without Heart to Heart, right? It's unbelievable. Heart to Heart back again, and Heart to Heart faces 7 in here. Delta Prince for Jimmy Jerkins and the Stronach team. Hembry, Mike Maker. Shug McGee's got Dr. Mounty, and certainly Shug the other day with Inspector Lindley on Sunday. Hadn't mentioned that win in the Danger's Hour, but Inspector Lindley came back up from Payson Park and scored with Jose Lascano. To start the Northeast campaign, you've got Chad Brown with Raging Bull, certainly emerged last year. Peter Brandt, you've also got Kurban Shadwell and Kieran McLaughlin, and a rat aboard, and we've got Clyde's Image too for Tommy Bush and the Sulamar team. Great wide open as well coming in. The Star Spangled Banner import. So a nice group of 8 for your Maker's Mark. And also on Friday, you know, the Racing Festival of the South has shifted a little bit. No Apple Blossom on Friday. The Apple Blossom is now Sunday, for those that weren't aware. And the Fox team will have broadcast. That's why Andy Serling's heading to Hot Springs, and heading right into our lap is Brad Free, who this has been as long a drought on this show for you as I can ever remember, far too long.
I thought I was disinvited for some reason. I'm just joking, of course. I'm glad to be here under some better circumstances, I guess, this morning than we have talked about over the last, you know, few weeks and months, because it's been a tumultuous winter here at Santa Anita, as everybody knows. And after the big day on Saturday with the big cap, the Santa Anita Derby, Santa Anita Oaks, we saw some terrific racing. Basilica winning the Royal Heroine. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was a safe day. Big crowd here. Handle was significant under the circumstances. So it's nice to kind of be back to at least a little bit of a semblance of normalcy. However, we're faced again with some uncertainty with regards to the Friday card here at Santa Anita, and I've been delaying handicapping the card because I'm not exactly sure what the conditions are going to be with regards to the whip. The Jockeys Guild came out with a letter on last Friday saying that, okay, we're going to do an experiment, and we're going to have the jockeys not carry a whip on Friday's 8-race card. So whether that actually happens or not remains to be seen, but I'm not...
What is the... Is there uncertainty?
I think there's some... certainly some behind-the-scenes discussions that have been going on, and yeah, it's not a certainty as of right now, Tuesday morning. I think that there is some concern that whether or not the riders actually have the right to make that declaration with no input from owners and or trainers. Certainly it's okay to not carry a whip, but that generally is done in consultation with the entire partnership
and with a declaration usually.
and
no whip
and noted in the program.
Yes,
correctly.
Yes.
Right, but if you look on the overnight for the Friday card at the bottom of every single race, whip off, and it has the listed the names of every single horse in the race. So as of right now, it's no whip Friday. Whether that happens or not remains to be seen. So it's, you know, it's one.
I think I saw that at a dungeon in New York on a Thursday.
They probably didn't have a lot of business that day.
Exactly. I forgot where that was.
Yeah. So there's a lot of uncertainty going. It's like one curveball after another this winter at Santa Anita. But anyway, the good news is we had a really fun weekend of racing. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the future holds.
I want to get an acknowledgement in. I said this to Jay on the air a couple of Fridays ago, Brad. But when Steve Anderson went to
Cheltenham.
Cheltenham,
right?
You were pressed into hard news service, and I say whenever this happens, whenever there's been, and it's happened a handful of times, that you've had to take off the handicapping hat. Not that you stopped handicapping, but there wasn't any racing going on. So you jumped right back into your reporting mode, and people that hadn't seen it, it was new to them. Those that knew, your reporting skills and your broader journalistic writing is just terrific, and that was a pleasant reminder of your versatility out there.
More importantly, think about this. Believe me, I've been a lot of places where the guys that write the stories they're reading them off the notes, basically in the afternoon, checking out the notes, adding a few anecdotes. Between Brad and Steve and Jay, I mean, I was here 18 years, and I think all of you guys were, you know, at least close to that here. So when you have a crew like you guys, you step in for each other. And not only that, when something gets written, I think it has a lot more credibility as opposed to, who's that guy? Or, I don't even see that guy at the track.
Right.
I know for myself, you know, when Brad comes in, he asks a question, he's not just asking it because he wants to ask it. It might be a tough question, but he's got something behind it because I see him here every day. You see Steve parading up here every day. Jay, if he's not here, he's checking in, but he's watching the races. So when they write something, it's pretty good. So part of the checkoff is what you do. You have to talk to the press and interact with the press. These guys have always been fair. you know, they're not out looking for the negative, which you get that at a lot of places. They're going to print what's going on here. So I know I appreciated that when I was here, and I think it's helped get through this situation a little bit when you see the tidbits that Jay throws in and all you guys, and we appreciate it. And I can say that now because I'm gone, but I really meant that. You know, it's like, you just said, hey, let's get Brad up here. I'm like, I don't know what that guy up here. But it's not that we need to be friends, which I think we became friends because we're truthful with each other.
Right. No, thank you, Hammer. I appreciate that. You know, one of the things that we all have in common, you guys, the staff on Daily Racing Form, we all love the sport of horse racing. We really, truly love it. I'm out here this morning, not because I have to be. I don't even have an agenda. I like to come out and just hang out and shoot the breeze with people and get to know the guys a little bit more. And over the last month and a half, I can tell you that just my mere presence here has paid dividends, not from a personal satisfaction standpoint, but there have been a couple of guys who have had issues with things that I have written, and I'm out here explaining why those things were written, what the objective was, and we have come to a mutual understanding, and whatever beef they may have had has dissipated. And I think it's called FaceTime, right? You just got to come out and hang out and have a good time. But the bottom line is, I love the sport. I love this game. I love the handicapping challenge. I love to wager, same as you guys. And I'm optimistic to a degree. I'm also a realist, and we face serious challenges here in California, and I want to see this gorgeous facility, Santa Anita Park, where we're sitting in the sunshine at, what is it, 80 degrees right now? It's beautiful out here. I want to see this place thrive. I want to see racing in California thrive and survive. I love coming out here. I've been coming out to the, well, I started coming here when I was a little boy. I spent so much time out in the wine shed in the infield, I can't even, begin to describe. The top of row M in the grandstand was one of my favorite hangouts. This is all before I became a, quote, turf rider. And then now I get to spend time up in the press box and hanging out and talking to guys on the backstretch. So I have a great job. I would like that job to continue and, hopefully publicize what's going on in a welcome, positive manner. But this, back to what we were talking about earlier, this has been a very trying winter, and I was not forced, but I took on a new role as reporter, and it kind of brought me back to my days of journalism school.
And Jay, when I brought this up with Jay a couple of weeks ago, he talked about your origins, your writing origins, and I'm going to forget where
I went to school at Cal State Los Angeles,
okay.
Which is when I started to go there because it was a business school and I was going to become an accountant. I was about a semester away from graduating with a degree and going to, join the accounting profession, and I'm sure I would have been very happy doing that. And I finally realized late in my education, you know what? It's not really what I want to do. So I had to start over, went into the journalism program, became the editor-in-chief of the University Times, the Cal State LA newspaper, and got a job at the Pasadena Star News.
Star News.
Went from there to the National Sports Daily, to the Racing Times, and I've been now with the Racing Form for more than 25 years. So it was kind of, even though the subject matter the last month and a half has been a little bit on the grim side, it was fun to be a reporter again, a hard news reporter, and gathering the facts and putting the story out there, whatever the story might be. And there were plenty of mornings where it wasn't a lot of fun, but it was a new challenge, and I actually enjoyed covering it while I was the only guy out here.
I did reach you, did I not, when Frank DeFord?
Yes,
died, and you. And
yes,
I'm going to find that. I should find that show.
I posted a picture of myself and Frank DeFord, and it was approximately 15, 16 years ago when the book that I wrote, published by Daily Racing Form, Handicapping 101, came out, and I was back at Churchill Downs doing some publicity stuff and ran into Frank DeFord, who was one of the top guys at the National Sports Daily. And we actually became friends. It turns out that we had something very much in common. He lost a daughter to cystic fibrosis. I have a niece and a nephew who both have CF, and they are doing terrific. In fact, I think my nephew just turned 30 years old. And once upon a time, when DeFord's daughter died, she was young. I'm not sure she was even 10. But the advances in medicine, thanks largely to fundraising efforts by people like Frank DeFord, has made a lot of headway and progress with regards to the treatment of cystic fibrosis. So we became friends not only because we both were sports writers. I would never even begin to put myself in the same category as one of the greats of all time, Frank DeFord. But we became friends not only because we enjoyed sports, but also we had that common link of cystic fibrosis that we often discussed and talked about. Even after I left the National Sports Daily, we stayed in touch for a long time. A great, great man.
I'm sure I relayed that story that I ran into Frank on the streets of New York the day of the first issue, and it's somewhere in the house. I had him autograph it. I had it in my hand. It was bizarre.
Yeah. I have the first and the last edition, and I also have the last edition that I worked for. I was one of the first layoffs, unfortunately. I think the publication only lasted a couple years, and
it was great. The National.
It was. They had so many top writers, Dave Kindred, and did Scott Osler go over there? I think. Anyway, there were so many great people on that staff, and I was just a rookie. It was the biggest break of my career, going from double or single A ball to the majors in one swoop.
What did they have? What were you covering?
I was covering horse racing.
Oh, just horse racing.
We
okay.
had two turf riders. We had a guy back east on the East Coast, and I was out on the West Coast. And one of the cool things, the very first Kentucky Derby that the National covered, I actually picked the winner of that race, and it was unbridled, and he paid it a ton. Off the top of my head, I want to say $20 something.
Yeah.
So it was I made a good first impression for my first Derby with the National, coming up with a $20 winner of the Kentucky Derby. So it was a lot of fun. It was a great break, and fortunately, I've somehow been able to survive in this shrinking world of sports journalism over the last. Well, we've raised a family and had a great time.
And did you Metro Turf?
No, not Metro Turf. Nope.
You mentioned the Racing Times.
Yeah.
Can you go through a couple of talk about that for just a few minutes?
Well, I mean, the Racing Times is one of the reasons why the past performances of Daily Racing Form are now, you know, up to modern speed. Yeah. It was a company founded by Steve Crist, and I think it was funded by I want to say Robert Maxwell, who was an English tycoon who ended up taking an unfortunate swim in the ocean one night. I'm sure there's a story there. I don't know what it was. But anyway, Steve Crist and a group of his colleagues founded the Racing Times to compete with Daily Racing Form. And we assembled a terrific group of turf riders. Jay Pribben was involved. I was. A lot of top guys back on the East Coast, but Crist was the kind of the driving force behind that. Beyer Speed Figures came into the public arena due largely to the Racing Times, and it unfortunately did not last, but for maybe, I want to say, a couple years, and then Daily Racing Form actually purchased everything to kind of put it out of business.
Yeah, because you had... They marched in, right? The Maxwell people came days after his death.
Right.
And Steve has told the story. It's quite something.
Yeah, it was an amazing run, an amazing ride, and great. I remember I had my interview with Steve Crist up in the grandstand right here at Santa Anita Park, and he asked me, you know, what are your theories of handicapping? You know, why should we hire you? And I said what I said to you guys earlier. I'm a fan of the sport. I also have read every single handicapping book that's known to man. Later on, was fortunate enough to write one. But guys like Jim Quinn and Dick Mitchell,
Ainsley, and
all those guys.
Sure.
Yeah, Beyer, of course. You know, certainly sure. Influential on my idea of handicapping. And it was a great rate run.
Well, speaking of great runs, looking at the day Saturday, and you had a best bet that I want to bring up, because we certainly all are going to follow the horses coming out of the stakes. one bad boy who you singled in on, and we had been following because Baltus had talked about him on the air. And then he ran into Omaha Beach in that second start. Baltus still wants to give him some dirt opportunities. He's an Ontario bred, so he you know, he's going to be clearly have an opportunity to run in the Queen's Plate.
Sure.
But that was the under-the-radar performance of the weekend, coast-to-coast.
Incredible. And he was certainly bred top and bottom to love the grass. Son of Twirling Candy out of a dam that had produced Baltus-trained Miss Bad Behavior. So he figured to move up on grass. But when they went the half in 45 and he was a single on my pick six ticket, I thought, well, there goes that. Yeah, it was good. We were live for one race and there's no way he can keep on running. Well, after that 45 half mile, he kept right on running and it was a very decisive win. It's true the turf course is playing very, very quick right now, but you don't go 45 and keep running unless you're a good horse. And one bad boy is a serious good three-year-old grass horse, and we're going to be hearing a lot more about him. It's funny because he runs like a dirt horse, right? With that type of running style up there on the lead going 45, that's the type of style that you expect to see on the main track. Grass horses often, you know, they save their best for last. One bad boy, he did it all early and kept on running. He's a good horse. Looking forward to seeing where Baltus goes with him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I immediately after the race, because Rich knows that I've been waiting for him, and I put him in my DRF horse watch, and Richie said he only ran him on the turf because the race that he was hoping for hadn't gone and had come and gone with all the with all the lost dates.
Right.
So he said this horse needs to run, and so he got the run in. But you may see him turn up yet in a big dirt spot.
I had not realized that he was bred in Canada, so that the Queen's Plate would be perfect, right?
Well, between him and you also, the horse we haven't talked about much is Avi's Flatter, who won the Transylvania on Friday at Keeneland for Josie Carroll. And the fact that they ran within 24 hours of each other, those are your major players. And of course, Cassie will have two or three yet to
as
emerge.
How many times has he won the Queen's Plate, Cassie?
Twice now. It took him forever. He got rebuffed repeatedly, and then
right.
then the filly,
Wonder Godot.
No, the other filly, the other filly that then hung around and took on Boys Elsewhere. Oh my gosh,
I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, I got to think about it. And she ran against.
Did Wonder Godot win the Queen's Plate
last year? No,
I don't think so. No.
Okay, then I'm wrong. The reason I ask is she's running in the Apple Blossom this weekend,
and she's taking her time, kind of getting back into form for the season.
Yeah, she is, but she's lightly raced. I don't know if she's good enough to beat Midnight Bisou, but that's a big race for.
Now she did win the Queen's Plate, but who is that filly? Who am I thinking of?
I can't think of that.
I can't either.
Lexi Liu.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Because she ran against the California Chrome, right? She ran against the Hollywood Derby.
In the Hollywood Derby,
yeah,
right.
She was out here. Absolutely.
Yeah.
She was out here.
Yep.
Lexi Liu. And because it took Cassie way longer to win the. It was a real thorn for him to have not won a Queen's Plate. So now he's got the two.
Yep. Yep. No, it's
2014.
There you go. Okay.
So we talked about the turf being a little, it hasn't been run on for so long,
right?
And they'll adjust it here. They'll put the tines in there and do what they got to do. But it was to be expected. Some of those speed horses going off, but we've seen our share of closers too. We did on Saturday.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
You just want it to be fair.
Exactly. The Simon Callahan trained filly Hostess, who came from far back,
far back.
Yeah, to nail her stablemate. Maxim, I think.
Maxim,
right.
Yep.
Right.
Very
on the line.
Well thought of. I mean, I know going in, coming off a maiden win,
yes.
That was a pretty nice effort. And I know there was a little bit of a buzz about her when I've heard all week, and so we'll see more from her.
Yeah,
probably see more from both of them.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure one of them will probably go back to Kentucky, and maybe one of them, stays.
Sure.
I'd probably split them up somehow, I would imagine. Couple of good grass fillies trained by Callahan. And how about Callahan's Bellafina winning the Santa Anita Oaks? She's the favorite for the Kentucky Oaks.
I was just going to talk to you about her. And, I made the comment yesterday that I'm not going to get drawn into the same thought process I had with Monomoy Girl last year, who certainly respected, but just we got to Kentucky, Wonder Godot and Midnight Bizou, and being here for Midnight Bizou's Oaks win, and actually I was here twice, so I saw her twice leading in. She and Wonder Godot both appealed to me, and I tried to beat Monomoy Girl, and I get the same kind of feeling. We're gonna get to the Oaks, and it's gonna look like on paper that she's running middling figures,
exactly.
80s buyers,
which she is,
and 90-ish, and you're going to say, well, she could be beaten, and then she's going to win, and you're going to feel like an idiot.
That's okay. I'm going to try to beat her anyway.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
I mean, depending on the price, look, she's a very good filly. I'm still not convinced that a mile and one-eighth, the distance of the Kentucky Oaks, is going to be in her wheelhouse, but, you know, a top-class racehorse can sometimes outrun their perceived distance limitations. And skeptical handicappers often do end up looking like idiots, and that might be the case again. But she's very, very good. She trained super. And her win the other day, even though the number came back a little bit soft, she lost ground every step of the way. The pace was slow, so the final time has to come back on the slow side. I'm not going to hold that race against her, but I think when all is said and done, a mile and one-eighth, maybe there's a chance to make some money. I just don't know who the alternative is.
We might have to break out the champagne here. Look who just walked up the stairs.
I know this guy.
Brother John White.
He's the Scrabble King from last night.
The Scrabble? He's the Scrabble. Last night, you crushed him in Scrabble.
Yeah, I crushed him, absolutely. It wasn't even
really?
Close.
Oh, man, that would be the guy. You know, when you got journalists playing Scrabble, that's pretty good. I bet you got a lot of trick words, right? They all had all different dictionaries from all over the world. Oh, see, this is a word, oonga, right? And I got to apologize to John. Not apologize, but I told a story about the Northwest or not too long ago, and I was hoping I was good. I mentioned you. Okay. Very good. You got to watch out. John's the king of the king of the Northwest, and obviously down here too. Did you have a story you wanted to tell?
I was just down there chatting with Mr. Baffert, and we were just shooting the breeze off the record, and we were talking about the idea of journalists in. Uncomfortable situations. And I related a story to Baffert, and I'll relate it now to you guys. And it concerns the synthetic surface era in Southern California. And this goes back, when were synthetics in, Hammer, at Del Mar?
They were mandated in the state in 2007.
Okay.
And so, as you know, Del Mar did poly, we did...
Whatever it was.
Cushion track.
Depending on what day of the week.
Or pro ride.
And pro ride and cushion track was at Hollywood. I think at the end we tried to...
Combine them.
And whatever,
you get four different surfaces.
And the Golden Gate, of course, went with Tapita.
Which
four
was
tracks,
smart move.
Four tracks, four different services.
Right.
It's California. What would you expect?
Exactly.
Yeah. So
that was the era, and I think the last one to come out of the three here was Del Mar. Was that
right,
correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Right.
But at any rate, I was just talking to Baffert about the uncomfortable situation of journalists and expressing opinions. And it had to be probably after 2010, and I was not a big fan of synthetics from a handicapping and a wagering perspective. And I also heard a lot of stories from the guys on the backstretch regarding injuries that occurred on synthetic that did not occur on dirt. To make a long story short, I wrote a column for Daily Racing Form that I knew was going to be perhaps somewhat controversial. And so I gave my editors a heads up and said, look, this is what I'm writing about. I'm expressing an opinion about the synthetic surface, and I'm just letting you guys know ahead of time that you need to take a look at this in case we need to have some sort of adjustment made to the story, maybe tone it down or whatever. And I filed the story a day earlier than I needed to. I beat deadline by 24 hours. And the office never called back that day. It wasn't until the following day, right on top of deadline, that I got a call from my editor. And what he said, and I'll paraphrase, is, A, we are not running this column. B, if you ever write anything like this again, regarding a racetrack in Southern California, there will be serious repercussions, potentially including termination. That was all I needed to hear. I have a family to raise. I had three kids that we put through college, and the last thing I needed to do was lose my job over expressing an opinion about something. And so the column never ran, and I have since backed off a little bit with regards to expressing an opinion. I still try to in a fair, justified manner, but that scared the daylights out of me with regards to saying what is really on my mind. You have to be very careful, particularly so in this current environment that we are in here this winter at Santa Anita. So, I kind of dodged a bullet back then and have been very careful since then with regards to saying what's on my mind.
Well, you have to do what the powers do, powers to be.
And they write the checks.
They write the checks, and that's what they have off the record for. So you can sit around and discuss it.
Exactly.
But when you put pen to paper, you can't take it back.
And listen, I'm not complaining about the decision made by my editor to spike the column. I completely understand. But what I did not like was the idea that if you do this again, you might be down the road with looking for a job. So anyway, that's it's one of those behind the scenes journalism stories that I don't know how applicable it is to your listening audience, but it's made me realize you have to be very careful what you say in print.
Well, and we're certainly this recent set of episodes has demonstrated in one particular case, not just one particular case, but just in the controlling the narrative realm, a pretty unseemly scenario. It's just really actually a little shocking that as intimate as this industry is, and sort of just everyone knows everyone else, and everyone basically has worked with everybody at one time or in some capacity or another. It's so inappropriate the way in which it's been handled. It's stunning, and the thing that's amazing about it is that the thought that everybody doesn't already know what the score is,
right?
And how this came about, and it is really surprising, to be honest, that all it does is make it worse and make everybody question basically the decision making process at every turn.
That's exactly right. You have to be careful what you say. But you have to be careful what you write. There's a lot of political considerations that go into, expressing an opinion in this day and age, even though, as you just said, Steve, everybody already knows.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody knows.
One big difference, we've got a big crowd going on here, with today is you write something, but used to be you write it and put it away and see you later. Now you write something, you get 200 comments.
Exactly.
This guy's a jerk. This guy, boom. It's amazing some of the reactions you get.
Oh, it's incredible.
And, everybody can sit in the closet under, Blue Boy and say whatever they want.
Right.
And it, I know I used to get criticized a lot in my life. So,
Sure.
I basically didn't read a whole lot. I knew when it was bad when a friend would say, hey, did you see what they wrote about you? I go, no, I didn't. So lots of times, and even articles that I just didn't even look at anything because very rarely did you get something positive back.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys do the same thing. You write your article and you might peek at a few, but you know what? People, you say, don't let it get to you. It does get to you.
It does. But you know what? After a while, I think you get kind of immune to it. At first, it used to bug me to no end.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. This guy said this about something I wrote. Oh.
Yeah.
And after a while, you it's the same guys who are always complaining about whatever you write.
And they never say anything positive about anybody.
Of course not.
You just move on.
Let it roll off your back.
John Sadler's going to join us, and there is a unique aspect here. Hammer mentioned earlier when we were off the air that Kurt Hoover had won the pool, the the Santa Anita.
Now everybody's going to be bugging him for money. I didn't really want to mention the deal, but
I bring up Kurt because he's the only one missing from what would be a powerhouse lineup between John White, Brad Free, John Sadler. All topping, 6'2" minimum, right?
let's get out and play some hoops.
The three of you? How tall are you, John?
6'4".
6'3".
I'm the Hoover, shooting guard.
You're the ball handler, and Hoover's got to be 6'2".
He's got to be 6'3".
Sure.
6'4". Yeah. Where do you fit into the mix?
Me? Waterboy? No, I wear the stripes.
He's got a little valve on him, doesn't he?
I could do some coaching, but I did more.
I did more
officiating.
Gotcha.
I was a rec league and church league and, CYO, that kind of youth league. I never did, major high school or anything, but I can do some officiating.
Cool.
And I guarantee you there's some elbows flying at him. John has talked about it, right? There was a great basketball league here years ago.
Yeah. John was just telling me last night that he played basketball one day with a guy by the name of George Hicker, who's now a horse owner. And John at the time, well, I'll let him tell the story.
He played at Syracuse.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll let John can tell the story. Yeah.
Well, Brad, handicapping 101 for those that have not don't have it on their library shelf among their handicapping books. Really, a great introductory and medium experience read. One of the really valuable books that if you've got young handicappers and fledgling players, handicapping 101 should be included on your list.
It's a great compliment to Richard Ng's book, Handicapping for Dummies,
right? Sure.
And both are on my shelf, of course.
Yep. Betting on horse racing for dummies.
It's similar, but tells the story a little bit differently. How to get started and just explains every facet of the game. And look, just like you, I got shelves and shelves of books. Yep. I mean, I'm still an old bookstore guy. And if I'm in an old town, I go back and I look to the sports, and I've got books from 1940s of how to have a handicap.
Sure,
anybody out there who hasn't read any handicapping book, go out and get a few.
By Quinn Mitchell, Tom Brohammer.
You will learn a lot.
Mark Kramer. I mean, there's a lot of legends out there. Yeah, buyer for sure. Yeah.
Well, and making himself a legend on a regular basis now, John Sadler, and he's going to join us. John, jump in, and we'll stay right here. And I think, Casey, it's going to be a 90-minute. Let me get a group photograph, though, with everybody. There you go. John, step forward. You're in the shadows. There we go. Look at this.
I've always been in the shadows.
Nice. Got it. Beautiful. John Sadler's Brad, thanks so much. Brad Free, everybody. And John Sadler is going to put on the headset. And John, good morning. Congratulations again on another big cap.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. Good race, huh?
Absolutely. And you were so delighted when you won your first one, being a California guy and what it meant to you to have it on your resume. And I don't know if you saw the tweet that I came up with early Sunday morning, the historic company that you and Costa are now in.
Yeah, I did see your tweet, and I loved it. Actually, me and Costa walked by the fountain in the paddock. It shows the 39 and the 1940 big cap winners. So we did that on Sunday morning. So it was pretty cool. Those were just iconic trainer-owner combos.
Charles Howard and Tom Smith with Kayak 2 and Seabiscuit, the only other winners back-to-back with different horses, and Accelerates Performance a year ago, and then Giftbox and McKinsey with a stirring stretch duel. And, it's funny. When they hit the wire, I thought, oh, Giftbox got him. Then when they showed it in slow motion right after, I thought, wait a minute, this is closer than it looks. But then finally it wasn't.
He got his nose out there. After that, I kept flashing back to the week before because Catapult, 2 weeks in a row, I'm in just crunch photos. So I said, this week we got to get. If I'd lost that photo, I don't know what I'd have done.
Look at John. Who you've been training, 40 years?
Yeah, close.
And look at, he's still smiling. But go to be able to continue your career and actually, you know, improve it at the end, you know, a lot less pressure. But I think we've asked you this question before. But when you get a guy like Costa and brother Pete and his wife, and you get them, and you guys get hooked up, you need it. Tell everybody what it's like to have an owner like him. Not only is he a great guy and he's into the game, but he leaves you alone. He's giving you, saying, you know what, John, you're my trainer. Go out and take care of what you want. Hey, you want to go buy gift box? Yeah, go ahead and do that. You want to run in a maiden race? You would want to drop him in for a tag? Tell what a pleb. I'm sure you've had, you're happy for every owner that you've had over the years. It's for some degree. But in this stage of your career, to have an owner like him that basically is hands off, and sits back and does his part, and for you, it's just got to be a blessing.
Yeah, it really has. You know, he does the grapes, and I do the horses, and I try to keep it fun. You know, I have to stress about all the sore feet or the this or the that, or for him, I want to keep it just nice and fun, and they're really great to train for. A lot of people would say, oh, I'd like to buy that gift box. But you go to them and you say, you're going to buy a 5-year-old turning 6. It's been on the farm a little bit. You know, but I have the ability just to go ahead and do it in this relationship. And, you know, sometimes it gives you a big swing for a lot of things to go right.
We're going to, you know, I reached out to Costa. I didn't realize how far away he lived from the track. How far is he?
Yeah, Bakersfield. What is Bakersfield?
Like, okay, I think it's 100 miles.
Okay, because he said I asked him if he could come out and we maybe do a live together, and he said I go back after Sundays. I go back to being to being a farmer, and so we're gonna reach out to Costa. You know, we've had so many fun conversations, John. You know, particularly the last few years, and at every level. And you know, one of the things that I thought was fascinating about Saturday was Twirling Candy's involvement and how, you know, gift box appealed to you in part because of Twirling Candy. And then we just talked with Brad Free about One Bad Boy, also a Twirling Candy. It was a big day for him here as a sire.
Yeah, he's doing really well. He had a great winner of the Tampa Oaks not long ago. He's had, you know, some really big crops are starting to come in this year. And he was such a good horse. People don't realize. I think he still holds the track record here at Santa Anita for 7/8. Just a fabulous horse, and doing well at stud. So I keep an eye out for his prodigy, and I have a couple of 2-year-olds by Twirling Candy. So it's pretty fun.
We're gonna include Costa in a minute, and John, I mean, gift box, when you get a ready-made horse like this, and you know, it's one thing to get, you know, a 3-year-old turning 4 or a 4-year-old turning 5, and they're getting into their maturity, but you can actually see, even if you just use something like the buyers, you can see the small, steady, incremental improvement, and he basically picked up where he left off and improved, has improved just slightly and enough to make him a top handicap horse.
Yeah, I mean, and we feel... you know, there was room in this division. We were in there a lot with Accelerate last year, and hopefully this year we'll be in there with Giftbox, Catalina Cruiser. There's a lot of great races for older horses around the country, so I think it's a division that, you know, got tamped down a little bit by the 3-year-old stuff. So, but there's a lot of great races out there for us to be in.
How much work? I mean, what did you need to do with a horse like this? And how quickly after watching him, watching him work and watching his habits around the barn, how quickly do you figure out or establish a game plan for a ready-made horse?
Yeah, well, I saw him actually the first time I saw him train was in when I went back for the September yearling sale. I went out to Windstar Farm and Richard Budge and saw him train out there and checked him out and said, he's good to go. Let's get him to California. So I get him in here, and I kind of gallop him until I feel he's ready to breeze, and then I just start to take him through the process of getting him fit. And then I actually toyed with the idea of maybe running him at Del Mar. I said, no, I think I'll wait for Santa Anita. You know, Rick changed the calendar on us a little bit this year, so we had that stake opening day, so that's what I aim for.
Well, and that worked out beautifully, and you know, now you add a big cap, you know, to the resume. Costa Aronis joins us, and you know, for years, Costa, when John would come on and we would talk about one of your stake winners, you would always say good morning, Costa, because you knew that he knew that you were listening and Stephanie was listening. Congratulations again.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're happy to be, you know, part of the Sanity Handicap. That tour on the Sunday morning was, John gave me a real eye-opener about all the historic horses that have won that race. It's really, really cool.
Well, and you've got back-to-back, and I know you got a big kick out of the tweet that I laid out, putting you in as important company as can be imagined. We got a loose horse again. There's basically one every morning, sirens off. They got him. Yeah, all right. They're watching, and there's quite a few horses on the track actually. There, he's kind of just cantering, and the outrider. He's there. We go. I think no. He's going to go that way. All right. They got him cornered. Anyway, Costa. You guys have had such a great run. You know, talk about your satisfaction with John and with how your program has just from claiming horses to you know, winning Breeders' Cup Classics. Talk about how much fun you're having.
Yeah, I mean, when you're blessed enough to get connected to John Sadler, we felt so lucky to just be included in his barn. In John we trust. We let him do his job. He's a horseman. He knows what he's doing, and we believe in him. We support him every way we can, and all of our success is sitting right next to you. It's all about John Sadler.
Costa, talk about your involvement in the game and how it developed, because nobody gets to have 25 horses in training and gets to that level automatically or overnight. What was the path?
You know, we just kind of built it little by little. John took his time with us. I remember when our first year with him, and he was going to the 2-year-old sale, and I asked him. I said, "Hey, can we be part of that? Can we jump in?" He's like, "No, you're too green. You're not ready for that yet. We're gonna keep building on this." So he kept us, he kept us in check to make sure, you know, everybody was comfortable with what we were doing, and we just kind of grew together. We just kept reinvesting. We've got to give a lot of credit to Lady of Shamrock and Iotapa. They kind of helped build the stable. All that money went back in, and we kept buying horses, and John kept claiming, and, we've done everything. We've claimed. We've 2-year-old yearlings now. We go to the ARC sale in Europe. We're a pretty diversified portfolio, kind of like a little stock portfolio. We're just really diversified. John's kept us pretty balanced.
John, that is such a compliment to you in terms of your approach to the business, because let's be fair, there certainly was an era where somebody would latch on to somebody with money and somebody who was eager and just start buying stuff hand over fist. So to turn to tell somebody we're going to wait and you're going to grow into this, to get this kind of payoff is really a compliment to you.
Well, I was when I met Costa and Pete, and you know, I said, let's claim a horse and see how you like it, because claiming is actually a pretty good introduction to the horse race game, and you get to see if you claim a horse, you can see him run within a month or 6 weeks or whatever, how it turns out, and see how you like it, see if you have a good feel. And they came in, and I got a good feel for them, that they had the right temperament, you know, to be owners. They're very enthusiastic. They take all aspects well. I mean, every day is not a good day, you know. We have injuries like everybody else, and we have disappointments like everybody else. But they're so even-keeled, I think that's what makes them so special. And Costa believes in, you know, letting his managers, whether it's the guys running the vineyards or the guys running the production, letting them do their jobs. And so even though people say, oh, you've got no pressure, I've got more pressure because, you know, what I do, it's self-imposed pressure because I want to do so well for these people. And, you know, and I'm not going to be the trainer sidling up the bar and say, my owner made me run this race. I was 600-1, you know. You know, so I take my stewardship very seriously.
And Costa, to that topic, you know, one of the things that we certainly have all seen in the industry over the years is people come in and they've had business success. Obviously, the people that, you know, in whatever walk of life, they made money and found success, and now they've got expendable income to bring to the game. And the tendency is to think, oh, I'm a businessman. I'm a businesswoman. I understand. I know, you know, what, how to be successful. And so I'll conquer this. And people that have come in with that attitude, 9 out of 10 times end up losing a fortune and getting out and being disgruntled and unhappy. And to come in with the attitude you obviously did, which was, I'm hiring a professional to handle, you know, my racing business, and you've learned along the way, you know, based on John's leadership.
Yeah, John's been a great educator to the whole Hirons family, to me, Brother Pete, the kids, the wife. We've all learned from him. But, yeah, you know, Steve, I don't go to my doctor and tell him, you know, how to, what prescription to give me. I mean, it's just not what we do. We let the professional people that know what they're doing do their job. And that, I mean, that's at the racetrack. It's here at the ranch. It's kind of, you know, we're just, that's just the way we kind of operate. We're not the smartest people in the room. I guess if we are smart, it's letting people like John do their job.
Well, it didn't take long. It only took you basically in your third year to get Lady of Shamrock, your first graded stake win, you know, Vagabond Shoes and Sweet Swap, and then Ayatapa, and then came Stellar Wind. And Stellar Wind, of course, brought you to the next level, more or less, John.
Yeah, she was a really fun filly, such a good runner, and we just loved her to death, you know, and we're actually, you know, we're rooting for her to have a good baby mid-April for Coolmore. So that was an exceptionally good horse. Really enjoyed it.
Hey, Costa, checking in. It's Rick Hammerly checking. I had to take Steve's headphone away because we only he only brought the traveling set. But anyway, congratulations to you again. It's I was out here and watching the race, and you know, it's fun to watch you guys in action because you have such a good time doing it.
Yeah, well, thank you, and we always appreciate you and everything you've done for us and for horse racing, and we miss you at Santa Anita.
Well, I've been, it's weird because I've been away for a while, and I came back this week to do Steve's show, and was my first day back at the races since I no longer work here, and it was kind of wild. And a quick story, it's like my only concern is where was I going to park? I always had a spot, so, right? It's crazy things you think of. So I said, you know, I'm going to go back to when I was a fan here. So I parked in the infield like the old days and walked over, spent a little time in the infield and came over and enjoyed it. And I know that's, you know, we're all old fans here. And I had a great day and just the race that you guys were in, the Santa Anita Handicap. I mean, sometimes you need a day like this. The horses tell the story, and what everybody's been going through, you let this day just happened, and guess what? The horses will get you out of the mess as much as anything else. And I thought it was a great day for the fans. But I likened the ride, and if you could imagine someone else on that horse, I was telling those of us that came here all the times that we have, remind us of Lafitte Penkai, day in, day out.
Yeah,
know, urging those horses, just carrying horses across the wire.
Yeah, Joel's probably the strongest rider in the country, in my opinion. By far, really, and he reminds me of a young Lafitte, you know, the young Lafitte. You know, a lot of these guys ride until they're older, they're not, they rely more on their brain, but in the day, the physicality that Lafitte could bring was amazing, and Joel's just as good, if not better.
So
Just ask John about, you mentioned Catalina Cruiser, and talk about what's ahead for...
Look at Steve. He doesn't even need a mic,
no.
Does he?
No.
But
talk about what's ahead
well,
for the
Well, go ahead. We've had a couple of color horses favorites for the Breeders' Cup, and Catalina Cruiser was one of them. And what's his plan?
Catalina Cruiser is on the work tab this morning at Santa Anita. He worked his first work, 37 out and 49 this morning. So we're pretty excited to get him back. It won't be long. He'll be back at the races. And, you know, we haven't picked anything yet. Everybody says, oh, where are you going to run? And we'll get him ready first, then we'll look for some spots.
So you got about 2 months to the Met Mile? Is that something that's a little close,
right? I don't have a calendar in front of me, but we're just going to just play it by ear. We're going to do right by him. He's such a good horse. When he's ready to go, we'll have a good race for him.
Now, what about Enolo Contesto? You had something there, and you still do, and you tried him against the big dogs here on Saturday. Performed well, and you take a little step back now. You think Preakness, or you just want to maybe, you know, win a little bit, get his condition, get his head back in the game?
The good news is he came out really well, so he'll go back to the track tomorrow, and we'll just kind of keep a close eye on him and then figure out which direction we want to go. You know, there's a lot of money for three-year-olds. If he wins the Travers, I'm going to be delighted, or the Haskell. You know, the good thing about running right here is you're running against the best, so you know exactly where you fit in. You could maybe tease yourself and go to some other track and then go to the Derby at 40-1. Costa doesn't want to do that. I don't want to do that. So, and then we had the disadvantage of the calendar this year. So it just made sense to run him at home. He ran okay, didn't run quite as well as we thought. I think maybe he laid up a little bit close, the way this track's a little heavy right now. So let's go back to take a little step back and then plan out what's next for him.
Yeah,
but I have a lot of confidence in the horse. I think he's going to be terrific. So we'll just kind of let it go organically.
I also want to ask you about Campaign, who there was a scenario, I thought, that if the pace setter from Cassidy, that if the pace had gotten hot, I thought there was a chance Campaign could come and catch a piece late. There, you've got something there to work with.
Yeah, no question. And Bejarano said, John, there's just no pace up in front of me.
Yeah.
They're going too slow in front for him to really get his show his best side. But a nice big horse, and I think he's going to be a horse we can use in a lot of different races. And we got fourth meeting four, and with no pace. So I thought, you know, that was a good race for him. Talked to Bill Farish yesterday. I think he was at the game last night. So congratulations on Virginia Cavaliers.
Absolutely. I got to ask you also about the horse running in the sprint at Keeneland. You and Costa have the import.
Ginger Nut. That's Ginger Friday. Nut. Friday at Keeneland. We're going to run her. She didn't get the best draw. She got the one, but she's going to come off the pace. So we're looking forward to that.
Well, you should use Joe Orsino's horse as a template for coming off the pace in the turf sprint after Imprimis's performance on Saturday.
Yeah, we said she went out actually this morning with several others. We'll run four or five there this weekend.
Speaking of that, what have you heard about the hill here? Are they taking entries on the hill? Have they decided anything? Have you heard what the future is?
No news yet. So everything, you know, has kind of been a little up and down, but I think we'll get back on the hill fairly soon, and then we'll go from there.
And, John, we haven't talked about it yet, and we pretty much all are in agreement that this morning moods are much lighter as with each passing day. But, you know, I had reached out to you at one point right in the middle of everything because you've always had, to me, a very level approach to things. Your thoughts about what transpired and what the future holds and how unnerved, you know, you and Costa and your other clients were by what, you know, what had gone over the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was a funny time. I've never seen anything like it. I don't think nobody ever has. So it's, you know, I've talked about it some, and then some days I wake up and I read 18 guys writing opinion pieces, and I said, well, I should just say nothing because everybody else is chiming in on what the solutions are. But I talk to management, and I talk to our horsemen's group. I like to keep a lot of our meetings closed doors and put on a positive front when we're addressing the public. But I think they're going to get things worked out here. That's kind of such a great facility, great place. perfect weather. I mean, you know, it's going to get sorted out.
You know, John never was a hothead or one of those guys, but you had your moments back in the day. But it's nice to have good horses. But Costa, you've calmed them down an awful lot. Every once in a while, you'd see the steam coming out every once in a while. And that's when you have to find them. That's why I always had two doors. I could always.
I go back to the old timers. You know, Charlie Whittingham would say, "Don't knock a horse till he's been dead 2 years, and then wait another 3 months." You know, so I don't know. So many times at night, I've gone to bed and I wake up the next day. Geez, I'm glad I didn't say anything. You know. Because, you know, it changes. You know, I had an owner call me once when the horse hit the wire and he was complaining about the ride. That's the worst ride ever. And I said, well, wait till the gallop out. They got to the gallop out. The jockey jumped off. The horse had got an injury, you know. But, I mean, sometimes you're just better off just to wait a little bit before you speak up.
Hopefully we learn that as we get a little older. The 24-hour rule is always perfect. Take a deep breath, wait till the next day. Most of the times you don't feel the same, but if you do, then go for it.
Okay, well, guys, I got to go.
Go ahead, John. I always keep you longer than I expect because it's so much fun to talk to you. John Sadler, St. Joe Bay, we didn't talk about. Congratulations on the San Carlos. And Costa, as always, always happy for your success. A delight to meet your wife, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Rick.
Always a pleasure, Costa. We'll see you around, and I might be knocking on the door looking for a job up with you. You never know.
A taster. You think a good taster?
I'll be a good taster, right. Take care.
Costa Aronis and John Sadler. We got to take a break. We'll come right back. And John White settling in. We're going to get our first serious look at the point system where John's got for us, because people are having a very hard time separating these Derby-bound three-year-olds. Back after this, Santa Anita, last half hour on our swing through. Back after a break.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats, or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15, and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
And had been an increasingly wonderful time here at Santa Anita, and a pleasure to get Steve Miotti to visit. And Steve, of course, with Lieutenant Dan in the Echo Eddy on Saturday. Steve, congratulations.
Well, thanks a lot.
And you also, without knowing it, I don't know when we were discussing this, not that long ago, Drag Race came up.
Ooh.
Right?
That's a long time ago.
Well, it's still right there in print. It's not going away.
It's kind of embarrassing, actually. It was so long ago.
Well, still.
Hey, look,
Delmar Futurity, right?
Steve's been around a long time. He flies under the radar. What he's been training for?
Since 87.
Since 87. And I would venture to say, just looking around, he probably has more wins than maybe half the stable area here.
He's
right?
Going on 1,600.
Right? Quietly.
Very
right?
Quietly.
But Steve, I knew Steve from up north. And
Golden Gate.
And
Bay Meadows.
Well, Golden Gate. And then we had I called him up one day when I was back at the Meadowlands and got him to bring out a horse called Music Prospector.
Ran second in the Pegasus.
And the winner, I got another guy, gentleman, down there sitting there in the red sweatshirt, Silver Ending, Mr. McAnally, to come out. That was my deal. Get these California horses out there. So Steve came out, and you know, it might have been the first time you took a horse cross country. I don't know.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I love it. Wow.
carried on, worked for Mike Mitchell for years, and
okay,
probably would have had another 1,500 wins if he didn't work for Mike. But
well, now working for Mike, it was worth 20 years of experience. It really was, and plus we had a great time. I'd say every day I worked there. It was beautiful.
And, of course, Phil D'Amato out of the Mike Mitchell School as well.
Yeah, Phil was a little bit after I was there. Phil knew Mike when he had the good horses. I knew Mike when we had the cheaper horses.
Early on. Well, you both have gone on and done very well. And you know, the guy that is your biggest booster is Big Leo.
Yeah, Leo and I go way back.
There's some fun stories. I don't know if we can tell them all on the air.
I don't think we can.
Those are usually the best ones,
right? That's great.
Now, you know, speaking of that, so Steve here, you brought up a subtle point, but something I think is a little different in the game. So Steve mentioned he worked for Mike Mitchell for a long time, went out on his own. Phil D'Amato. Worked for Mike Mitchell for a long time. Went out on his own. And you see why these guys win races. Because they spent time learning from somebody else as opposed to just saying, hey, I want to be a trainer and going out and, you know, lifting legs and all this stuff. But I think it's changed a little bit over the years. You don't see that as much. But you really can delve back and look at the guys who win races, who they came up under, and if they came up up under anybody at all. Do you see that out back there in the backside a little bit more than, I mean, not as much as you used to when you were around?
Yeah, you know, it's a difficult deal. Like when I worked for Mike and we would talk about new trainers, Mike would say, Don't educate them, because the young trainers will be your friends, because we need someone to run against.
Well, we got them. And, you know, one of the nice parts about Saturday's win, Lieutenant Dan winning the Echo Eddy, the cowbred, Grazen gets all kinds of horses. Working with the Nick Alexander, what a nice client to have.
Yeah, I mean, if at Nick's house, you can see the progression. You can see my hair. When I was black, I was grooming his hair. I was grooming his horses. My hair was black, and now I'm training them. My hair is gray. That's how long I've known Nick. I groomed his horses when I worked for Mike.
Nice. And you know,
he stands Grazing.
Yes, at Tommytown.
And Nick famously has all kinds of a lot of the baseball player names, and here's Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump, and I met him last year with Johnny D. Johnny introduced me to Nick, and of course, car dealer. Nick can't say no. Is that true when you call him?
Well, I've asked him to drop some horses, and he has said no.
There you go. Only when it comes to cars.
Well, Nick, I've been winning races a long time. Talk about this Calbred, because it feels like he's a horse that, with every level of accomplishment, Steve, he continues to improve. And he's one of these horses that takes a couple of tries, typically, at, you know, going up the ladder.
Yeah, he hasn't yet convinced himself that he's a good horse. And like a lot of these horses, some of them are born aggressive and want to do it. Lieutenant Dan was, he's a very docile horse. You can put a little kid on his back. Anybody can pet him. And he doesn't really tout himself. He's so quiet, easy to gallop. His works are somewhat on the lazy side. But I think he's going to turn out to be okay. The route question is still out there. The one time we routed him, it was probably, well, we don't really know why he didn't fire. But there is no Calbred Stakes short until Del Mar. So there's a long one on the turf at Golden Gate, and there's a long one at La Salle, and that's probably where he's going to have to show up.
Well, it feels like there's plenty of upside, you know, yet. I'm just figure wise an 80 buyer. One of the other tie-ins to this is also Giovanni Franco, who had a nice weekend. He also won the Las Flores for Hollendorfer, big upset. And Franco, you know, seems to be under the radar out here.
He is. But I think with some of these jocks are leaving. Giovanni, with a little luck, I think he has the ability to be leading rider. He can ride any kind of horse, and his forte is really turf. But he and I met at Golden Gate, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. He really couldn't get going, but he used to work all my horses, almost all of them, and I could only ride him on two a week. And finally, he still was a good rider, but he was really, really nobody knew him. He didn't sell himself. And so I told him one day, I said, "Hey, I got some good news and bad news." He says, "Oh, okay, patron, what's that?" I said, "Well, the bad news is the guy who rides you here, he doesn't want to ride you no more." And he says, "Really, who's that?" I said, "That's me." I said, "The good news is I have 40 horses for you at Turf Paradise if you can go there now." He left that afternoon. He went and rode for Miguel Silva. And the rest is history.
How about that? That's nice. Give a guy the entree to get to the next level if they've got the talent.
The funny thing about Giovanni is he was born in Mexico City. Many people mistakenly think he's Italian. And so even when he went to Canterbury and he was leading rider, they thought he was Italian. And so every time he won a race at Canterbury, they would play the Godfather song. But it's one of those things, how do you tell them that they're wrong?
Oh, that's great. That's pretty funny. I love it.
He was an overnight success that had been
for years in the making.
Years and years and years.
Yes, yes, he has. And he's a very good horseman. It's almost when he works these horses for me, I don't want to talk to him because he'll tell me a lot of things that, as a trainer, you don't want to hear. He didn't finish. He's lazy to switch leads. He was nervous in the gate, but he's very good at helping you that way. There's a lot of guys that just say everything went great, even when everything went wrong.
Hmm. I want to ask you, Steve, before we go, I want to ask you about the whip situation and how a trainer like you, you know, that has got a wide variety of horses from claimers up to stake horses, how you view this and what, you know, what your feeling is of, about how it's going to pan out should the riders, you know, not be allowed to use the stick long term for anything other than, you know, potentially safety, quote unquote.
Well, I think the game is changing, and we have to realize that that's just the way it is, and we have to change with it. I believe that this is going to make horsemanship, I think it's going to make jockeys, they have to get better at thinking, situational riding, when to go, when to wait. I think at first we're going to see a lot of jocks send, just like we do in the morning on these workouts. In the workouts in the morning, a lot of the horses that get to the front stay in front. And so we have no historical basis for this without a whip. So Friday is going to be very interesting. I don't have anything in, but I'm going to be here.
So you're not trepidatious about this or worried that, you know, that if you've got a horse that, you know, is typically a little lazy and needs motivation, you figure the jocks will figure out how to motivate horses like that.
Well, I think we're going to put, you'll see more blinkers on horses, like that.
Interesting.
But it's a zero-sum game. There's still going to be an exacta payoff, a trifecta. Hmm. There's going to be winners and a lot more losers, regardless of the whip or not.
That's nice to hear that, because and more and more, everybody we're talking to, and I said this the other day, Rick, we talked about it. We said horsemen will adapt and are quite willing to adapt to whatever transpires.
Very resilient. We go through that. Whatever it takes to survive and survival mode out here. And guess what? They're still going to run around in circles.
That's right.
And people are still going to bet on them, mm-hmm. and they'll adjust. And like you said, maybe horsemanship will rear its head.
I think
it
will.
Well, and speaking of which, can't let you go without asking about a horse or two, Spider Jurgensen. Speaking of horses named for baseball players, another Nick special up at Golden Gate this week.
Well, we're trying them on the turf. The Boisterouses seem to like the turf. Most of them want to route. I believe he's somewhat still unknown as a sire. I've had enough of them to know that they're big, strong, sound, and stubborn.
And they'll get better as they get older. Wait till you get five,
so.
And the same way they did for Shug.
Yes.
The way he did for Shug.
I agree.
Sometimes you just got to wait them out, you know, until their talent catches up physically, and you know, they keep growing until they're five.
Yes.
Well, and Steve, you keep growing.
Well, only the wrong way in my belly.
A pleasure to get you on here. I'm delighted. And we were talking with Leo on Saturday, and he said, you got to get Steve on. I said, hey, well, sure we will.
Okay, well, great. Great to be here.
Steve,
anytime.
Steve Miotti, everybody, and Lieutenant Dan.
A hidden gem. Watch out for those Miotti horses, north and south.
Okay, thanks a lot.
I love it, Steve Miotti. And we're going to stay right here. We've got John White to close out the day and the week. And John is going to give you his first look at the John White point system. Everybody, I tried to direct you to his first article about his column at ExpressBet about 2 weeks ago, right? 2.5 weeks ago. And that gave the first indication of what the point system is going to look like, and particularly with this group of horses that I think people are having a little bit of a challenge separating. And John was listening to Miotti from the seats here. Of course, we're at Clocker's Corner, and you're taking the shade too. Good point, John, because it absolutely a glorious, glorious day. Again this morning, when I got here last week, it was still a little chilly, and now it's gotten to be beautiful day after day. John White, a pleasure to do one of our recap visits here at the end of the Santa Anita Swing.
Good to be with you, Steve, and I've enjoyed your Ed McMahon, Rick Hammerly all week. He's done a fantastic job.
Very much so.
I told him so.
No doubt. And been absolute uniform praise for Rick's daily tie here. I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow morning. Back alone again when we're at Oaklawn. John, you know, the weekend, obviously, with the three big first Saturday in April results, and I sent people to ExpressBet to your column a couple of weeks ago when you had the first pass and the origins of the point system. We've got two races to run, Lexington and the Arkansas Derby. Give everybody a feel for what your initial thoughts are and the way things are shaping up when you score it out.
Well, Bob Baffert said it well yesterday, and I've been saying it all along here in recent weeks, that this is wide open Derby this year right now. Unless Omaha Beach or Improbable or Long Range Tutty or somebody steps up and runs a Bodie Meister Arkansas Derby, I mean, we could be looking at a 6-1, 7-1 favorite in this race, honestly. The strike system, it goes back. I started it in 1999. I can only keep score on it to 1973 because a couple of the categories are associated with graded races, and 73 was the first year of graded races. Essentially, you want to have zero strikes or one strike. There are nine categories, and the vast majority of horses are in the zero strikes, one strike category. Two isn't too bad. There's been a number of them. And there's only been two horses with more than two. One was Mind That Bird. He had four strikes. And Justify last year had three. But we know Justify broke so many rules. He was just one of those freaks that comes along. And so, I mean, it's not surprising. And also, one of the categories in the nine, when I started it, Steve, was a horse needed to have at least six lifetime starts going into the Derby. Well, that has changed dramatically.
Very much.
I don't even really count that category much anymore. I've got my scoreboard here. You can see the number of strikes of the horses so far that have, because you have to have run your final race before the Derby before I can count up your strikes. That category six, these horses, you know, you guys were talking about, you mentioned Rick Hammerly about how the winners of the Bluegrass, the Wood, and the San Diego Derby will go in with four career starts, and how unusual that is, but this has become the norm, and they're more raced than the winner of the Derby last year, who went in with three. So, I mean, this is where we're at. So, there's all, but interestingly, as far as the strikes, it's as convoluted and confusing and bunched as everything else that we're using to try to measure these horses. The only horses that I would throw out from the strike system this year are Spinoff. He's got three strikes. Bourbon War, if he gets in, he's got four, so he's like Mind That Bird. And the Japanese horse has three. Other than that, everybody's at least got, a lot of them have two, and I would prefer a horse with zero or one. And when I do my top ten, I focus on those horses. You mentioned, Steve, the big races we had last weekend. The Bluegrass, the Wood, the Santa Anita Derby. But something happened at Keeneland that I think is very important. And that was the workout by War of Will, the forgotten horse. Mm. And he went out there in 48 and change and was quoted in the Blood Horse, Mark Cassie, as saying Tyler Gaglione wanted him to go between 48 and 49. And Gaglione said at the top of the lane, he reached up and grabbed War of Will and he took off. And he was like, whoa, big boy, and he galloped out strong. This is one of the great gambling opportunities that comes along very rarely. War of Will may not or may win the Derby, but the price is going to be right. Because if you figure he doesn't have the stifle problem in the Louisiana Derby, let's say he wins the Louisiana Derby, he's under 10-1 in that closing future book, the Kentucky Derby future wager.
Yeah.
He'd be one of the favorites. He closed at 24-1. He's going to be like at least two or three times the price that he would
be.
Very
true.
And I trust Mark Cassie. Would you consider his body of work, but what he did especially with Classic Empire, a kind of quirky horse. I mean, if there's a trainer that can have this horse ready to peak for the Kentucky Derby, and he said, you know, he was concerned about that 6 weeks. until this happened.
Well,
now,
it ended up being a blessing,
exactly.
Obviously. But still, it
see,
is.
See, and I love it. I love the doubters.
It's a question of doubt. If War of Will comes back and wins the Derby, it's going to be one of the most amazing stories in the history of the race. For a horse to perform, to have that non-effort in the penultimate start and come back, it'll be remarkable.
Well, it reminds me of 1995, not to the same degree.
Yeah, Thunder Gulch. Yeah,
that's right.
Thunder Gulch wasn't beaten 42 lengths.
No, but he went in as the 6-5 favorite of the Bluegrass and ran a dull fourth to where Mike Smith hopped off and rode Talking Man, who won the Wood by almost 8.
Right.
And Dwayne Lucas had trouble talking Gary Stevens into even riding the horse, who was in Kong Kong and supposed to ride Larry the Legend, who had won the Santa Anita Derby. And Lucas was smart enough to try to get Stevens. He called up Mike Smith and said, you better tell your partner here that this horse could win the Derby. You better talk him into it.
Well, he had just come off a Florida Derby win, right?
And the Fountain.
And that was back when the Florida Derby was a prep for a prep, when the meet ended in mid-March.
That's right. That's where he ran the clunker in the Bluegrass.
Right.
But see, again, if he wins the Bluegrass, Thunder Gulch is 6-1, 5-1, he paid $51.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Back in the day, back in the dosage days, he was one of the three horses I remember.
4.00.
He made the cut.
Barely.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
There was only three that year, and I was one of those goofballs that actually took a look at that stuff during when it was hot.
It was something to consider.
It sure was. And like you said, it was a $50 horse. Let me get this straight. Wayne Lucas and Gary Stevens. But that's what you get in the Derby, and that's what you're going through right now.
I mean, this horse, like I say, I'm not saying he's going to win. But
we got plenty of time to digest, and they'll still be, you know, he's still going to work easily 2-3 more times. Let's, John, give everybody the early read on who's got 0, who's got 1. I mean, who are the prime candidates based on the strike system?
Well, as I say, everybody that has run their last race before the Kentucky Derby at this point, they have 0. Or 1. Well, let's go through. Here's the 0. Here's the, by my standards, has 1. A spinoff, 3. War of Will, 1. And that's another reason I like him. Maximum Security. I'm glad that we're doing this because that's another horse. You heard Baffert say yesterday he thinks he's the horse to beat. I loved it, Mr. Bick, with your first talk of over the weekend. You said, don't write this horse off. And believe me, that's a serious race. Forget that first race. Just forget that. That's irrelevant. The Florida Derby's relevant. That's a good, and he doesn't have to have the lead. He's in one race sprinting. He sat third. That's a good horse. So don't, and he's got 1 strike. Bodie Express, the maiden, who's got those interesting, he could hit the board in the Derby, I think. He's a 2-striker. And that's the kind that hit the board a lot, the 2-strikers. Code of Honor, 1. Roadster, 2. Game Winner, 0. And he's the only horse of all the horses so far that have run their final race before the Derby with 0.
Hmm.
And it makes sense. He's the champ. And it's not like he's stunk up the place this year.
No, he's run 2 very good races.
In fact, I mean, this wide trip, and believe me, Roadster, this had to be a tighten the screws to get him into the Kentucky Derby. That wasn't the case with Game Winner.
True.
Tacitus, 1. Vekoma, 1. Heikel, 1. Tax, 2. Win-Win-Win, 2. Signal Man, 2. Cutting Humor, 1. Gray Magician, 2. Plus
Cake Parfait.
Thank you. 1. Master Fencer, 3. Some Like It Hot Brown, 1.
He's not getting it.
Okay. A Bourbon War, 4. And Instagram, he's not going to run anyway. And he would have been 2. So.
Now, the Japanese horse, did you just give him 3 strikes?
Yes.
Did you actually look at the PPs?
Yes. And
okay,
it's one of my things is where you are at the 8th pole in your last 2 races. So I had to go back. Fortunately, we have the video, and I had to look at the 200-meter mark and where it would be for a furlong in American Racing, so I had to go do video study on that horse.
Well, tell your record of your strikes.
Well, it, you know, like I say,
pretty darn good.
The vast majority have had 0 or 1, so I mean that's why. And it, last year, like I say, Justify was kind of a fluky type deal. I mean, with the 3, but he was in so many ways. I mean, how many times do you see the Santa Anita Derby winner win with 2 races under his belt? Baffert was knocking me for making him the 4-5 morning line favorite. in the L.A. Times and on Louisville radio with Aaron Rodgers. He goes, I think John's just gotten carried away. He went off at 4-5 and won the Triple Crown. So, you know, but and by the way, you guys were talking about Pinkeye. 1985 Santa Anita Derby right here. He's on a horse called Skywalker. We had a whole bunch of people out here from the East Coast in the press box here, filled with East Coast writers back in the day. Stevens is, Pinkeye's got the lead on Skywalker, and a young Gary Stevens on Fast Account comes roaring up to him in the stretch and goes by him.
Inside the 16th?
That's right. And you, if you stop the race, you'd bet the house, the car, and everything else on Fast Account. And Pinkeye won that race by a neck on Skywalker, who next year won the Breeders' Cup Classic. But these guys in the press box, because we didn't have simulcasting back then, you didn't get to see races around the country as much as we do today. These guys, their jaws were on the floor, and they're going, look at that ride, that Pinkeye, that strength, unbelievable. And I said, look, you guys, we see that all the time. We got a name for it. We call it the Pinkeye Power Play.
Absolutely. I said it the other day. It could be the first race on a Thursday
or
the feature. It didn't matter. That's what you got when he was in his prime. Every single time, he would just carry horses down the line.
I mean, he really would. And, I mean, that, he took pride in riding every race as if it was the Kentucky Derby. And, I mean, that's one reason the fans loved him. You know, the stewards didn't like Manny Yakaza, and I've got the list of his fines and suspensions that takes up a whole, like, two columns in Turf and Sport Digest. The stewards didn't like the guy, but the fans loved the guy because he went out there and would do whatever he felt he was going to do to try to win a race. And if you bet your $2 or more, you like that as somebody giving it more than 100%.
John, just about, we got about 2-3 minutes to wrap up, and obviously you and I'll next week we'll continue to update, and we'll have the Lexington and the Arkansas Derby to deal with, and some, you know, some numbers at that point. Your thoughts about the weekend? You've seen all the big caps too over the years. Talk about what you thought about the weekend.
Well, as I congratulated John Sadler right here, and I said, you know what? What a fantastic race the Big Cap was this year. And I'm so pleased, too, because the Big Cap has taken at a hard times this year, unfortunately. And it's a race so steeped in history. And to see those two horses, McKenzie and Gift Box, head-to-head, nose-to-nose, down to the wire. I mean, horse racing does not get any better than this year's Big Cap. It was fantastic. So that was really a big highlight, too. But see, the poor Big Cap, it's on a day. It's actually having to take a backseat to the Santa Anita Derby. So the poor Big, I just feel for the race like you feel for somebody, you know, that just doesn't get the good breaks. And that Big Cap just hasn't gotten the good breaks, unfortunately. But I will say, let's just say, getting back to the Derby, which is what the focus of so many people.
Sure.
To me, right now, I like Omaha Beach, but of course that could change after the Arkansas Derby. I like Mexican Security a lot. I like Baffert's too. So I really feel that those four are kind of the winner very well could be coming from those four at this particular point. So, and War of Will is, like I say, my wild card.
That's everybody's wild card.
At the price he's going to be. But to me, that's how where I'm focused. It's such a wide open year. Those are the horses that I like the best at this point.
Well, the Arkansas Derby will go a long way, and I must. And you know, I'm sure you're rooting Blaine Wright with another twist of fate. I'd like to see him get in, and he'll be a wild card too.
That's a nice colt, boy.
Yes,
and he's a scat daddy, and here's another one where perception. Oh, he's a turf horse. He's a synthetic horse. He's blah blah blah. No,
he's a horse.
He's a good horse. You know, when he was on your show talking about him, it resonated with me because he would say, there wasn't anybody in my barn I could work at that his horse just dominated everybody.
Well, John, I appreciate it, and thanks for coming over. We got less than a minute, I think. Hammer, I don't know what to tell you. I can't thank you enough.
Listen, the crowd's cheering. Unbelievable. Yeah,
that's a standing O.
It is. Look at all these people.
No, you're off. You turned the thing off. That was not the right way to go.
You rookie.
Anyway, Steve, I really want to thank you for asking me out, and I've had a blast working with you. It's tough to keep up, but we try and move along. being able to talk to, you know, friends of people I've known for years and years and years out here. And it's just good to be out here at Santa Anita again for a little bit. Who knows when I'll be back, but
we'll be back.
We'll carry on. But I've really enjoyed the week with you. Learned right. a lot, and you do a hell of a job.
Too kind, and this was so much fun. I don't know. Tomorrow morning I'll be lost without you know. I'm so used to being alone, but you know, to be able to bounce things off and the interplay, and then of course everybody that came through. And today, Jay Bridman, Billy Koch, Brad Free, Steve Miotti, John Sadler, and Costa Aronis, and John White. Apologies to Jeremy Plonk, who I owe a call. Maybe we'll get to Jeremy tomorrow. We'll come to you live tomorrow from Hot Springs, Arkansas, back at Oak Lawn. And it'll be draw day as well. Noon tomorrow, Central Time, they'll draw the Arkansas Derby and that great card. Thanks, everybody. Replay 6 to 9 tomorrow morning here on Sirius XM. And we'll talk to you live from Oak Lawn. And they got the new name, Oak Lawn Casino, Oaklawn Casino, and they and racetrack. They changed just the other day. I got to have to learn the new name. Thanks, everybody. It's been an absolute wonderful run here again. Coming here is just so special, and I love it. And I'm want to thank Mike Willman and Nate Newby in particular for their support and their hospitality. Good luck today. Talk to you tomorrow.
Got to go killing all the bees.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.